The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Content may be discussed that could be distressing to you depending on where you are in your healing journey. If the episode becomes triggering, practice self-care by turning off the episode. If you need to talk to someone, you can always contact your local crisis center or RAIN's national hotline via chat on their website at rain.org or by calling 1-800-656-HOPE. All the links are provided in the show notes. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Here Podcast. I am very happy to have you, and I'm very happy and excited to have our guest today, Isabel Muller. Yes, Isabel Muller, and she is the founder and CEO of Switch, which is the first ever sustainable and switchable underwear. I've never seen anything like this. I was checking it out, and I can't even tell you how many times this would have been so handy in my life. So I'm really excited to hear about that. But before we start, there was something, there was a quote I saw on your website, Isabel, that really spoke to me. So not only was it cute and funny, but it also spoke to me in a more thoughtful and deeper way, which I don't know if that's what was intended, but let me share it. There's no such thing as the perfect vagina, because let's face it, they're all perfect. And I just absolutely love that. Welcome, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. I love that quote too. that really sums up kind of the voice and the vibe around Switch. I created this company and more the brand and the vision around the idea that it should be really okay and open and normal for women to voice their needs and be comfortable around talking about their vaginas. And since they're all so different and we all have completely different needs, talking about what those needs are, and, you know, we need options and products. And the underwear market is really singular in a lot of ways and addresses particular needs with new companies that are doing absorbent underwear like Thinx and NYX and all them. They're really paving the way for new products and new markets to come through and address the other needs of women. So that's been really exciting, and I'm grateful for that. But that sentence is really based around this idea that I grew up with, and I know a lot of other women grew up with, that your vagina is supposed to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it's not only drilled into our minds, but also the minds of men or other people that you might have relationships with. So it's difficult to overcome it. So thank you for choosing that quote. That really sums it up.
Absolutely. And I loved how you said that. This idea that we have growing up, that vaginas are supposed to be a certain way. And that can be just, and it's all has nothing to do with how we feel about our bodies and our vaginas. It's always how somebody else feels about it, like you mentioned, whether it's your partner that you're with or whether it's media, whatever it is. This is how it's supposed to be, and this is what I'm expecting. And I just call, you know, bullshit on that. When I was in college and I was studying religion, I know I've mentioned this before, so maybe the audience is like, Felicia, enough of that. But I started because I wanted to find like this truth, right? The spiritual truth. If I studied all the religions, maybe I'd find that truth. And it ended up where I solely focused on how religion affected the female body and how it treated the female body. And the vagina was a huge piece. And I wrote a paper on that. And anyways, I just absolutely love that. And I want to get all into your into Switch and learn all about that. But I also want, I know that you had shared, besides being an amazing entrepreneur, that you have a story about recovering from an eating disorder and depression and anxiety. So I would love to hear, let's start with your journey, where that came from or how that developed, your anxiety and depression and that eating disorder, as much or as little as you'd like to share. So how that affected your life. And then I'd love to hear how you came out of that and move into your company. But you don't have to do all of that in one breath. Let's start with your story.
Okay, great. It really does come full circle with my visions around Switch and just the conscious around the female body. It's not a coincidence that that is how my disease manifested. The earliest I can remember starting to, you know, not feel okay was probably when I was 10. I had a really, you know, simple childhood. I grew up on this kind of farm in Western Massachusetts. We weren't, you know, operating as a farm or anything, but I grew up with horses and chickens and barn cats and dogs. And my mom and my dad and my older brother lived out here. It's interesting that I'm actually here right now visiting my family. It's almost perfect timing because it brings back so many memories that maybe I wouldn't have access to living in Los Angeles. But I had a really special childhood. I rode and I played the piano and I'd meet my friends down the street at the ball field and hang out, and it's very storybook like. I went to a tiny elementary school down the road, and you know, the bus picked us up at the bar that was also the bus stop. Like, you know, there's only a post office and then the inn, which is the bar, and the library, and there's no street lights or anything. It's a very secluded area. I grew up helping my dad a lot, working on fencing and projects around the property. And I think everything really cultivated from my parents' relationship, as disorders and issues usually do. But my parents started fighting and not seeming off when I was around 10 or 11. And that's when things just changed. I have random memories of, a very specific memory of listening in bed, and I could tell my brother was listening too. You know, the hall light is on and we could hear our parents fighting downstairs. And I usually didn't get out of bed to see what was going on, but that night I did. And I remember walking down the hall trying to be super quiet because every floorboard in this house creaks, and listening at the top of the stairs, and it just sounded different. It didn't sound like what were their usual fights. And I ended up walking downstairs to see what was going on. And it's like a scene from a movie. My dad was literally a foot out the door. Like, he had a hat on, his coat. My mom was crying. I remember the sweater she was wearing. And he was about to leave. Like, he was going to leave. Mm-hmm. And I think them seeing me standing there prevented it from happening. Oh. And I remember another time when I think my mom almost left. It was very confusing to me what their issues was. You know, as an 11-year-old, I didn't understand. But as I got older, it snowballed. And by the time I was 12 or 13, they separated, I think. Maybe I was 14, but it was a long saga of difficulty with them. They got separated when I was maybe 11, and then I don't think they actually got divorced until I was 18. But it started with little things, like my dad would sleep at the office, or not come back, or little things like that. And eventually they were separated, and my mom was incredibly depressed and just sad all the time. And simultaneously, as my parents were separated, my brother went away for boarding school in California, went to an art school there. So I was kind of alone here with them, experiencing the whole thing. And my mom was so sad. I didn't really understand later, you know, how awful the experience was for her, coming from knowing my dad more now. But she couldn't be a mom, you know. It was just me and her, and she was miserable. I mean, to be left, or just for her to have such a huge marriage, and my father, over the years, like the best word for it is he ghosted her. Like, they were separated, and then he stopped talking to her completely, wouldn't see her, like, on a huge scale. Like you think about being ghosted by, like, someone you've been dating for a few weeks, and it sucks, and it's annoying, but to be ghosted by someone you've been married to for 20-plus years,
yeah,
it was so traumatic for my mom. And she was miserable and couldn't be my mother, and simultaneously going through menopause, and I was going through puberty, and nobody had what they needed. Nobody had what they needed. And my brother was away, and I felt like I was being punished for having this experience. And I then, like, through high school, so I started at my like public middle school, which was awful. The kids were awful, and I begged my parents to let me go to a smaller private school, and somehow they let me go to that, which was really a saving grace for me. It was the 7th through 12th, 120 kids, like,
oh wow,
lockers on the honor system. Like, it was very community driven, and, you know, everyone had to play sports. It was very loving and kind and accepting of all people. And it was a very nurturing time for me. I was struggling, you know, 13, 14, at that point, I was struggling. I was sad because of what was happening with my family. But once I entered that school, it really helped me grow some really good friends and feel really comfortable being myself. And teachers really cared about me. Teachers could see I was struggling. And I think through 8th through 10th, that's when I really started to get depressed. Like, my depression really grew in adolescence. And I think that's because, you know, my needs weren't being met as a daughter. I didn't have a mom. I didn't really have a dad. And I was just trying to replace and fill the hole with friends and a boyfriend. I had, you know, I fell in love at 14 and had this great relationship with this boy. And that was really helpful to feel loved. But, you know, that was the beginning of me trying to fill the gap of not having a dad. And I'd have these experiences where I lived with my mom for a little bit, and then I tried to go live with my dad. He eventually got a little house 30 minutes away. And I really wanted to split the time because I didn't want to be with my mother full time because she was miserable, and we just fought and fought and fought. We hated each other. Well, at least I hated her. I was resentful of her for not being there for me. And I didn't get it. I didn't get why she was sad. I got why, but I didn't get why she couldn't be there for me.
Right.
So it got to the point that when I saw her crying, I would just feel anger. I would just resent her. And I couldn't be there long. So I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go stay with Dad for a little bit. And then I started to develop this rhythm of living, you know, split ways, because I saw other friends who had divorced parents splitting their time like that. And I'd end up staying with my mom for a week, and we'd get in a fight, and she would say, just go live with your father. Wow. And then I'd live with my dad for a week, and we would get in a fight at some point, and he'd be like, you should just go live with your mother.
Oh, man.
And that really stuck out for me and hurt. Because my parents were individually going through so much. My mom was dealing with it very viscerally, and my dad was not. I really preferred staying with my dad because he didn't talk about it. He didn't talk about the pain. He didn't talk about what was going on. He was building a new home, so there's like more creation happening over there, you know, buying things, cooking. He was discovering things about himself, and it just felt more positive over there when, in fact, that was not good. Yeah. My dad never wanted to talk about anything. He just brushed everything under the rug. And then my mom was an oversharer, and it was inappropriate. So I had these two polar opposites of the wrong boundaries. So through 8th to 10th, I got really depressed. My teachers noticed. I wouldn't be able to sit through class. I would just, like, I remember being in Spanish class, and I was just, I was about to cry, and I didn't even know why, and I just ran into the teacher's office and talked to her. And it was really my teachers at that school that helped me identify that my relationship with my mother was inappropriate, that she was treating me unconsciously as a sister or just a part, because I was the only person there.
Yeah.
That she could talk to. And so really through high school, my relationship with my mom was more under scrutiny than my relationship with my dad, which is now non-existent. But finally, after a few years, I was feeling a little, I was outgrowing that school, and I just wanted to experience new things. So I ended up going to the public school in the town that my dad lived in. And, you know, the back and forth continued. But my mom was in therapy or on antidepressants and really trying. And my dad just continued to get more and more blank. Like, he just left everything behind. And I felt like I was kind of clinging on to the last by staying with him and being a part of his life. But junior year, I started at the public school. I made new friends. I started drinking, smoking a ton of pot, before school, during lunch, after school, just numbing what was going on, getting into trouble. I got arrested at one point with a few of my friends for driving around with open containers in the car. Like, I just didn't really care. I wanted to fill my time away from my family and feel loved and accepted and cool. And throughout this whole time, slowly developing an eating disorder, I had no control over anything. I didn't have control over my relationship with my parents. I didn't really have a relationship with my brother. I had no idea what was right. So I remember, I remember starting when I was like 11, you're conscious of your body. You grow up being conscious of your body, especially as a girl.
Yeah.
You start to see media, you start to see movies. You see that a particular body type is what you should strive to be. Like, it's no secret anymore.
Yeah.
Women are supposed to be small and beautiful and fit into this standard. That's what we strive to be. And if you're different from it, you feel shame. And you see girls that fit the bill and want to be them and feel jealousy towards them and shame. And so, you know, obviously that was, that started growing in me as a preteen, and then just throughout my teens, it got worse and worse. And my main behaviors were binging and restricting, which are kind of the most, it's a very secretive set of behaviors, like bulimia and anorexia is very visible. And bulimia, you're obviously purging. So yeah. It was, I didn't know that I had an eating disorder until I was 18. I just thought that I was doing whatever I could to be what I was supposed to be. So I remember by the time I was 15, I started really growing those behaviors by wanting to have control over my diet. I started realizing that I could start controlling what I was eating because I was living with parents at two different times, because they would ask me what they wanted to buy. Like, I could cook for myself. And so I remember researching how to be healthy. Like, it started like that. It started like that in a restrictive way. I remember, I have memories of binging since I was like 8. Like, I would eat crazy things, like, just to, I would feel experimental, but it was really binging. I'd eat huge bowls of ice cream when my parents weren't around, and like tons and tons of Pop-Tarts, and just, but I didn't know what that was. I thought I was just like a growing girl.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like, oh, it was when I didn't gain weight. You know, when you're 9, 10, you don't gain weight. You're like, ooh, I can eat all this food and feel good and nothing happens. And then, you know, once you hit 12 or 13, it starts really showing. And I noticed that my belly looked different than the other girls' bellies when we were just playing soccer and sports bras. And I wanted my belly to look like their bellies. So when I was 15, I discovered how to be healthy, and I used Google. And that was something I knew how to do then. So I, like, learned about, it was beneficial in some ways because I'd just been eating, like, whatever before. But then I learned, like, oh, like, there are healthy snacks, like nuts and raisins and things like that. But it just got out of hand. I got skinny, like, skinnier, but still kind of unnoticeable to people, because I was tall, and that's just what my body type was. But and then it led to me discovering what being vegan was, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a, you know, my inner brain was like, that sounds like a great disguise. And I was like, I'm vegan now, because that was restrictive, and the disguise was that it was moral and eco-friendly and protecting the animals. So I had control over that. I could say I was vegan and nobody could do anything about it. So that gave me control. And that lasted maybe like a year and a half. And then I went to vegetarianism, and then it kind of trailed off. But then I just started restricting, and I would just binge and restrict. And I feel so shitty about my body. I was just constantly looking at my body in the mirror, pinching myself, wishing I could take a knife and just cut my body apart. Like, the shame and disgust I felt for my human form was so overwhelming. It was just unbearable. Like, I would just pinch myself and wish it was gone. And I didn't know that that wasn't okay. I didn't know that that was wrong. I thought that I just wasn't doing my part and not trying hard enough to be the body that I'm supposed to be. And I was just overwhelmed with depression and I numbed by spending as much time with my friends that I could, just smoking so much pot, binge drinking, doing reckless things. You know, by the time I was 16, I was dead set on losing my virginity. I was like, that is going to fix my problems. because everyone was having sex. Everyone was, you know, I'm from a small town and, you know, my whole friend group was like, everyone had sex with somebody at some point. Like, it was just like, but you did, you binge drank. And then like, oh, who'd you hook up with last night? And I didn't come, you know, I came from this like little sheltered school where like nobody was having sex and like people were just like throwing Latin parties and dressing in togas and like watching Sound of Music, and which is amazing and wonderful.
It's yeah. So specific.
Yeah.
Togas and Sound of Music.
You had to take Latin. So going to this public school was really exciting for me because there was all these things that I could try and new ways to numb and new people to meet. And everyone was having sex. So I was like, I was with a boyfriend at the time, but it wasn't happening. And this was like making my mission. And then, you know, by the time I did it, this is coming up for me right now because I'm home right now visiting my family, and I just found this bucket of my old poetry in my old bedroom from my senior year in high school. That's another, like, sixth grade all the way to college, I was like, I wrote. That was how I dealt with my feelings. I wrote, and I was actually pretty good. Like, I wrote good poetry, and I remember, like, entering a contest. I won the contest, and I was in creative writing class all the way up to senior year, and I actually majored in poetry my first semester of college, but I haven't written in a long time in that way. But I found all these poems, and I found a poem that I wrote after I had sex for the first time.
Shut up. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I found it and I was like, ooh, this will be good. And I read it and I was like, oh my God, that's awful. Like, it was, I remember it being not great, but it, like, I wrote about it in this really miserable way. I was drunk at a party at 3 a.m. in the morning in the bathroom. And like, I just wanted to get it done. Because I thought that that would make me fit in and be cool and be a part of the crew. Even though my closest friends were like, it really doesn't matter, but it's okay. Like, just when you're ready, it's not a big deal. But I wanted.
Do you think there was anything, a part of it of also being wanted, since you felt so.
Oh, totally.
Like, you didn't.
Totally.
Yeah, you didn't find your body acceptable and sexy or whatever the case may be, and that would make you, like, you should prove that you're wanted and that you're 100%. Sexy in that way.
Yeah, I hated my body so much. I wanted to make sure that someone else liked it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I also hated my body so much, and it was because of the sexual abuse, it was more because of the attention it got, and honestly, a bunch of stuff I couldn't even possibly understand, and mm-hmm. the fact that what it was experiencing, it was more, I also felt very disconnected from my body, like, because I hated what it was experiencing. So I hated it. And that grew into, I remember being a teenager, looking back now at pictures, my gosh, I was so thin and I never felt thin. I never felt thin enough. I remember exercising for 2 hours a day, every single day. And like, I was so thin all the way up, even into my 30s. I look back when, I look back at some of the pictures like 8, 9 years ago when I was working at this company when I met my husband now, and still thinking that I wasn't fit enough. And I look now, and some of the shirts that I wore, my 15-year-old daughter wears now. And I was wearing that as like a 30-year-old woman. So I was very, very thin. Now I'm on the polar opposite. So I have always really struggled with my body. Now I don't feel comfortable in my own body, having gained weight after my last daughter, and being 43 now and struggling to get that weight off. I just don't feel at home in my body and really working towards feeling home. So I totally can identify with what you're saying.
Yeah, that I completely understand. Yeah, it's the disconnect. It's not, not feeling at home. That's such a huge concept. And that really brings up the body dysmorphia, you know, from these like experiences and trauma. We stop seeing what is real.
Yeah.
Because we're so crazy. Like we're so, it's a disease. Like I didn't know that this wasn't okay when I was in high school, you know, and I would, you know, weigh myself and pinch myself and work out twice a day, and nothing was getting the results that I wanted. So, you know, I just hurt myself, and I just didn't get really bad until I went to college. I picked a school in Chicago, and my dad drove me out there. That's probably the last like great time I had with my dad. You know, I got a dorm where I had my own room, and it was the kind where you bought your own food, and it was very like suite style, and I lived alone in Chicago, and I made a couple friends. I made my best friend there. She was the only other girl from my state, and found me on Facebook and was like, we should be friends. And I was like, great. So we became best friends and spent all our time together. And I was restricting. I wanted to be thin. I was like, I'm done binging. I want to be thin. And no one's watching now. So I'm going to be cool, Chicago, fashionable, skinny. That was like my goal. And I remember making myself meals. Like I didn't have a lot of money. My dad would send me money sometimes, but I would like cut a ramen package in half, and that would be a meal.
Oh my gosh.
And then smoking cigarettes. I got really into cigarettes because that curbed my appetite. And the whole school week, I'd be so good in my head, you know, I'd eat like, I'd make half a turkey sandwich. I'd make a turkey sandwich and I'd split it in half, and one would be a meal, and then, you know, little tiny thing, and then maybe like a couple of carrots or something. And so I just like really ate small and controlled, and like, you know, had all this power over this, and not once feeling any better about my body. I'd still look at myself in the mirror and be disgusted and sad and depressed. But once I started college, I started doing a lot better in school. Like in high school, I wasn't that great. I got some A's, but mostly B's, some C's. But once I got to high school, I like got really productive. Like it's like I found control in getting A's. I got really into the fact that I was getting all A's. So I became kind of this like overachiever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when this like new thing sparked in me about accomplishment. Like, I never really got what I needed from my parents, but I was seeing this praise in my grades, you know, and normally from like adult men teachers. And I was like, oh, this is great. This makes me feel good. So I started like doing better in school, but for the wrong reasons, and, you know, getting thin. And anyway, the day that I figured out I had an eating disorder was when I was at a pizza place with my friend in Chicago. And we got a pizza and I took one slice, like a little square, and lots of salad, and ate that. And I was like, I'll take the rest home for later. And then I had to go to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom like right after I ate, and I came back. And my friend got really serious and asked me, like, did you just go throw up? And I said, no. And I was being honest because I wasn't purging at that point. Mm. And she's like, okay. Well, I've been really worried about you. And I was like, okay. And she said, I have a lot of experience with people with eating disorders, and I think you might have one. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, you eat really, really small meals, and then you eat a ton. And that's not really normal. And as she was talking to me, like, you'd think I'd get really defensive.
Yeah.
Like, no, like, I'm fine. But I honestly started to feel this like slow drip of relief in my body. Mm. Like, oh my God, somebody's noticing me, and somebody's like gonna save me. Like, yeah. I felt this big relief, like somebody notices me and notices what's going on.
Someone cares.
Even though I, yeah, cares. And, you know, I grew up with the idea that like you shouldn't be fat. You know, my family wasn't like, you better be skinny, but the idea was that you shouldn't be fat. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I remember being at the dinner table when I was little, and I like really loved bread and butter, because who doesn't? And I remember my brother teasing me, like, bread and butter makes you fat. Bread and butter makes you fat. And like my dad would always kind of criticize larger girls and like,
yeah.
Also be really, there's always this, just sidebar, there was always this threat of me being assaulted. Like, my dad wouldn't let me walk to the library by myself or like do things by myself because he was like, you're gonna get raped. Like, if you put yourself in a situation, like, you're not gonna have any control and you're just gonna get kidnapped. Like, it was very much like, you better watch out. Like, don't do that. You're gonna get raped. Like, you don't have any control. So like, basically putting that on me, like telling me I don't have control and that if I just am somewhere, I'll be raped. So anyway, back to my friend, she pointed it out, and I was like, wow. I felt really relieved because I was in so much pain. I was in so much pain. I was so tired of hating myself and wanting to be different and wanting to be thought of as hot and loved, and which shouldn't be like related. And she really took initiative. I don't think anything would have happened if she wasn't like, okay. And you know, the reason she was so proactive about it is that she grew up with a mother with addiction. Like, she knew that she could help. So she found me a treatment center in Chicago that took my insurance and had me go meet with them. And I was willing. I'm still so surprised to this day that I was willing.
Yeah.
Because you think
big steps.
Yeah, like big, fast steps.
Yeah.
Like, I went from not knowing I had an eating disorder and just thinking that I was wrong in life to, oh, okay, help. Like, but I think it's just because I was so broken and so sad that for me to just have care sounded amazing. So she found me the treatment center, and I went and like had an intake, and that's when they were really like, yeah, you have an eating disorder. They described it as an EDNOS, which is an eating disorder not otherwise specified. Because growing up, you, at least in my generation, like, you really only know bulimia and anorexia, and I didn't have either of those. So I just thought I was controlling my diet, but they're like, no, binging and purging and controlling your, I mean, binging and restricting is a form of eating disorder, and body dysmorphia. And so I went through that treatment center for a little while, and I would go there 3 times a week. I met with a dietitian, and I loved it. I was like, ooh, structure. Like, this will be good. Like, so we had group meetings with other girls where we would like have group therapy, and then I'd have my own therapy, and we'd have group meals where they would give us like a proper portioned meal to help us know what a meal was. And then if we needed to go to the bathroom, they would have to come with us.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but the group therapy was really helpful to be around all these other young girls who had eating disorders. And it was really mind blowing for me because I'd see this group of girls. Some people looked completely normal and some people looked really thin. And it kind of opened my eyes to the fact that it really is a disease, just like alcoholism is, or another type of addiction. Like, it's just your brain picks something to be powerless over. And for me, it was food and my body. And, you know, the one girl who probably had the worst disorder looked like not skinny. You know, she had a belly, she wasn't skinny, she would look totally normal. Mm-hmm. So it helped me really understand that it is in your brain, and I am. So that was really the start of my recovery. But I did go through a pretty dark period through that, where it was basically my eating disorder kind of being like, no way am I going anywhere. And that's when I started purging, that's when I started restricting even harder and learning more about nutrition so that I can manipulate my diet. I ended up dropping out of school and going home. And, you know, obviously my family found out, and I just couldn't handle being alone in Chicago anymore. And I went home to live with my mom, which is difficult, but, over the years, my relationship with my mom got so much better, and we're really good friends today. But my relationship with my dad really deteriorated. When I dropped out and came home, I had to tell my dad. That was when I really noticed something was wrong with him, because he didn't really want to hear it. He had to pay for it, but didn't really want to talk about it and didn't really get it and didn't want to learn about it. So that's when I started to feel, I think up until then, I had like disappointments with my dad. Like, growing up and living with him in high school, I remember him like, you know, going out to see his girlfriend, but then not coming home at night and then not telling me, which at the time I was disappointed with, but I didn't know was super wrong. Like, I was 17 or something. Like,
yeah, he just wouldn't come back with him, and he just wouldn't come back.
Yeah. Ugh. A lot of stuff like that. Sorry if you could just hear a rooster.
That's okay. And oh, before the call started, Isabel and I talked about how, you know, finding a quiet space during this time, quarantine is really hard. And I welcome the beautiful sounds of nature. So we'll just leave that rooster.
Good. Yeah. He's down the block. I can't control him. So this is when, you know, I moved back home, and I started to seek more help. I went to an eating disorder group at the local hospital, which was great.
And I started to understand recovery and started to, I'm really lucky. I found and identified recovery really early. And that's a huge thanks to my friend and to the people in these treatment programs. I mean, it was probably a decade of pain, but I before understanding that I had a problem, but I'm really lucky I didn't, you know, a lot of women my age right now are still deep in their eating disorders and have never known recovery. And I'm so lucky that I was pushed into treatment and pushed into the identification of my disease. And then learned from a really early age about being vulnerable about it. So by the time I was 19 and had moved back home and was in this eating disorder group with a bunch of like old women, like for some reason it was all old women. There's just me and all these older women at the hospital, like doing art therapy. And it was amazing. Like they were great. And they had lived these long lives and are still struggling, but it's because they started working on it so late. But it was relieving and felt good to be around like these old souls that, like, it doesn't matter who you are, disease exists. So that's kind of like that ends the climax of my eating disorder recovery. Like, ever since then, I've been figuring out ways to soothe and cope and navigate the disorder in a healthy way. I've been in therapy forever, which is really helpful. You know, I've gotten really into exercise in a healthy way. And like, I found structure and understood like good meal plans. But there's always dips and waves, and eating disorders are so sneaky. Like you'll think you'll be fine and you've been fine. And then you realize, oh shit, I've been doing this habit. And that's indicative of my disorder. So it's a constant battle. But what has been really helpful for me lately is going to meetings, 12-step meetings for eating, and practicing meditation and more spirituality. But during that time when I came home, that's when my anxiety started, which has been my biggest struggle over the past decade. It's almost like my depression subsided and then put on a new hat. And yeah. I kind of just like entered this new chapter where I came home. I ended up moving to California later that year. I didn't know what I really wanted to do with my life anymore. Like I'd been studying poetry and I loved writing, but I was like, oh, right. I don't know if I can make a career out of this. And another reason I left that school was because I really wasn't challenged. I was getting really good grades and I had a 4.0 and I just felt like I really wasn't learning much. But, you know, the ego boost with all the A's was pretty good. So, I came home and then I went to my community college and then I ended up meeting another guy. And we fell in love and I decided I wanted to move to California and he came with me and we drove out to California. We were an interesting pair. I was recovering from an eating disorder and developing anxiety and he was bipolar. So we kind of not fed off of each other, but we felt safe with each other because we both struggled. And that was really meaningful. Up until then, I was with partners that really didn't get it.
Yeah, that makes sense to have someone that totally understands, or understands, maybe not totally, but understands what you're going through. It may, and being someone who's struggled with her mental health, and I don't mean this in like an unkind way, but being with somebody else who understands, it makes you feel like you're not crazy, right? Because when you're with somebody who doesn't, is like, why are you acting that way? It makes you even feel worse. But I'm sure being in a relationship where you're both struggling with your mental health, that was also really hard.
Yeah, exactly. But we got out there, mm-hmm. California, and that's when things started to grow for me. I think that was the first step where I was like, oh, I can want to do something and then just do it and then figure it out on the other end. And that was driving to California.
The experience of driving to California is kind of what made you realize that.
Yeah, in a way, I think it's a lot of little things, but I think that was one of the big moments when I thought, oh, I have control over my life in a way, and I can do things that I want to do and it'll be okay. For a lot of people, that's like a huge deal, moving to another state and then just figuring it out on the other end.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like a foreshadowing for my life. Since then, I really, I had a lot of growing to do. I was only 19 and I was, dating a 27-year-old. So my perspective was really skewed on how progressed I was as a human. But, because I felt much older than I was, because I feel like I'd lived such a life up until then with like this trauma with my parents and my eating disorder. But we moved to Santa Barbara. I ended up getting all these different jobs, and then I ended up working like two or three jobs at a time and then going to community college. And I decided to take an architectural drafting class because that always interested me, and I was interested in interior design. And it turned out I loved it and I was really good at it. And I took an interior design 101 class. And after those two classes, I was like, I know what I want to do. I want to do interior design, which was a really good feeling for me because I had always been wanted to be artsy and had a creativity, but I didn't have much hand skill. Like I wasn't a painter. I didn't feel like an artist, but I had a very like even brain in terms of being analytic and being creative. So interior design and, engineering really became that, like manifested that balance. And I ended up kind of gaining momentum at that time of hustling. Like that's when my hustle really started. And I was healthy. I was eating well. I was exercising. I was going to school full time. I was working two or three jobs at a time. At that point, I'd become independent from my parents, like legally or, like taxes and health insurance and all that. So mm-hmm. I was really independent and simultaneously, my relationships with my family ebbed and flowed, but over the years, my relationship with my dad really deteriorated, and I just started realizing that he was letting go of me.
Wow.
And it's like this huge polar opposite. Like I was being successful. Like I was doing things. I was working hard and accomplishing things, and I was feeling really proud of myself, and everyone who came into my life was impressed and proud and beneficial in like a loving, supportive way. And the more that was highlighted, the more I saw how my dad was not being my dad, and he would show love through just sending me money, like a couple hundred dollars here, a couple hundred dollars there. But he, over the years, he remarried and had two new children. And my brother and my relationship with him just really deteriorated. And at this point, we both don't talk to him, which is really sad. But my relationship with him really, really fucked me up. I was abandoned in every possible way by him. And that really drove so much mental trauma. I am constantly, it's like my ambition and my accomplishment is two-sided. Like, it's because I love trying and succeeding, or maybe failing and then learning, but it's also because I'm constantly trying to prove myself, and I'm constantly trying to like gain acceptance and maybe his love.
Yeah,
which is really interesting.
But then as you got more and more successful and you're able to prove this, then he's pulling away.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I'm doing this all for myself. But for a while there, I was like, I just felt like he always saw me as this 16-year-old fuck up who got arrested in a Friendly's parking lot. Like, he never saw me as an adult. He just saw me as this child. And I just, but at this point, I know that he is, at this point, he's just too ashamed and scared to come back into our lives. And that's really sad, but I'm moving forward.
Yeah.
And,
I was just going to say, it sounded like what came to my mind, and I have no idea because I'm not a therapist, but it was interesting how you said as you became more and more and more successful and independent, that's when he started to pull away and separate. And I thought of, not that he just saw you as this 16-year-old fuck up, right? That you were a kid, of course. And then as you became independent and self-sufficient, that he thought, okay, now is a time that I can, not that he should have, but that I can kind of let go and move into this other phase of my life where I'm doing my own thing, which is not okay. But I'm just saying, like, he saw you as independent, and then that was his I guess what I'm trying to say is that he did see you as being independent and on your own. And unfortunately, that was how he took his cue. Okay, now I can kind of move back.
Yeah, maybe he thought like I didn't need him anymore. And you know, so much of our, I really try to remember that so much of our parents' trauma is from their parents.
Yeah.
And that generation just messed a lot of people up.
Yes.
With the expectations, and that, like, he has a huge history of abandonment, like emotional abandonment, and it makes complete sense to me that he is the way he is. But the difference between me and him is that I'm consistently working on myself, and I've been in therapy since I was 15, you know. And
yeah,
he's a 60-something-year-old adult and has barely cracked open his brain.
Yeah.
So I surround myself with people who work hard on themselves, and that's how I grow. And my chosen family is incredibly valuable. And I have a beautiful relationship with my brother and his partner and my mother and her husband. And I'm so grateful.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot to be grateful for. And you know, all this trauma in my past and my life, like, that I still deal with is just makes me who I am. And I've just really learned to be vulnerable, because that's the only way I can really, like, move forward.
Yeah.
Which is the total opposite of my father, who just brushes everything under the rug and creates a new thing, like, yeah, a new family or a new project or whatever. But this, that movement in my life, like the movement of recovery and the movement of accomplishment, and like instilled in me this confidence, even though, you know, I'm going to be struggling with my eating disorder my whole life, but it's because it's in me, and all I need to be doing is being aware of it and acknowledging it. But you know,
I've realized that. I think it's taken me years, And when I was younger, I always just wanted to be done with it. I wanted to be over that trauma. I wanted to be over the depression. And now I realize that all of that is, just like you mentioned, a part of me. And when, excuse me, when you'd said depression put on a new hat as anxiety, I thought, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. It's almost like, okay, so now I'm moving past this depression, which we've, you know, we've uncovered or discovered how to deal with it and healed it in therapy, meditation, however we do that. And your body's like, wait. No. When we were experiencing, you know, depression, at least we were safe and we were surviving. So now here's this other way that I could manifest this, and we have to learn how to work with that. But I've definitely, it sounds like you have, even though it's a struggle as well, come to peace with, this is a part of me. And it, sometimes it'll come up and I'll have to work through it. But where I'm at is such a good space, and it, I've healed so much, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And right now is a perfect example of one of those waves. Like, quarantine has been so fucking hard.
Oh yeah.
For everybody, but it's like,
how's it been for you?
In the beginning, it was harder. Now it's better because I'm really trying to get back into my groove. Like, I struggle with anxiety in a very intense way. Like the past 5-6 years, anxiety is really like, that's that new hat. Like, I'm constantly fearful of failing, or fearful of somebody not liking me, or disappointing somebody. And that is so relevant. And that's something I really work on, and exercise really helps me, and yoga and meditation when I can. But once we got into quarantine, it's interesting. My anxiety subsided, except for this one crazy panic attack I had. The anxiety relatively subsided because I sometimes feel embarrassed saying this, but it's like the whole world stopped, and I felt that the whole world was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So it took the pressure off of me a little.
Yeah. We're all united in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, it was almost comforting to know that nobody could do their best right now.
Yeah, no, like, that's a beautiful nobody, way to put it.
Yeah, I'm glad you think that of it that way. I feel guilty because obviously so many people are in pain and dying and sick, but I felt like it really humbled everyone for a little while. And I just felt like, I don't need to succeed right now. I don't need to do anything right now. I just need to be healthy and put everyone else first by putting on my mask and staying home. So it was almost relieving, but that was momentary. And then we soft launched Switch, and I had this like 2-week period of like, oh, like I was anxious. I was not really eating. I felt so shitty because I was starting to gain weight. You know, everyone gained weight over quarantine, because, you know, our bodies are just trying to take care of ourselves because we're in like, you know, survival mode. But it just, a lot was happening, and I just felt awful, and I had these like dips of depression and anxiety, but I'm feeling more leveled now. And I think that's because, you know, it's been some time, but also this year is just so crazy.
Yes.
the pandemic, and then recession, and now revolution, and which is great. Like, I've been really involved, and this is important. Like, this is so important what's going on. But, you know, it has caused so many lives to just pause and
recalibrate. How you put that, I don't feel at all. I mean, it wasn't, I know what you're saying. I think about, And unfortunately, when I'm editing an episode, I can hear myself pause constantly because I'm thinking, like, I want to make sure I frame this in a way that comes across how I mean it to come across. Mm-hmm. But how you mentioned the pandemic is so true. I didn't get it all that you were, you know, of course you're not happy that this happened, and you understand, and we all realize that there are people that are sick, but the way you explained it had the whole world pause and everyone was pausing, and it, even though there was this, you know, the pandemic and we're worried about getting it and we want to stay healthy, that takes priority. So all the stress we're putting on each other for meeting these deadlines for work or for this or for that, that's making us feel like, you know, we're not worthy and we're not capable, and just all of the stuff that we throw, because I have anxiety attacks as well, that we put ourselves in with our daily to-dos, stopped. And there was, mm-hmm. you know, that quiet and that focus on your health. And I can totally resonate with that mm-hmm. message.
Yeah.
How did you, so you have, thank you, by the way, for sharing that, your beautiful story and your journey to where you are now. And you had mentioned that you soft launched Switch. How did you mm-hmm. come up with that? Like, what was that inspiration? And tell me about Switch.
All right. Yeah. So I'll just start with the motivation to pursue it first. I think it's important to acknowledge that I would never have had the confidence to move forward with Switch if I hadn't already started a business beforehand. I worked for a firm for years in LA, and then eventually left that firm and started my own interior design business.
Awesome.
Just me, and I had an assistant at one point, but it was, you know, small operation, but I was doing my own projects and had my own clients and worked with my own contractors. And I did that for a couple of years, and it was awesome. It was so fun for me. I really developed during that time confidence around my creativity, my style, my goals. I was very sustainably focused. I wanted to spec furniture and materials that were the most eco-friendly options available, because I have a huge problem with just such wasteful consumerism, which a lot of people do. So I really wanted to have that underlying goal there. But I really grew a lot career-wise through that business venture, and learned so much about how to start a business and what the ins and outs were. And even though it was really hard and annoying, and all the financials and taxes, and it wasn't as hard as I thought it would have been. And it felt great. It felt great to not have to ask permission to have a life.
Yes.
And which is especially important for me because my family lives so far away, and to visit them and whatnot. So last year, it's literally been 1 year since I started Switch. Wow. Almost down to the day. I have had the idea for this type of underwear for a while, just because, and this really ties into body stuff and, you know, female needs and empowerment. Like, my whole life, I have experienced, you know, the typical wave of puberty and adolescence and learning about your vagina and a sex ed and all that. But, something that has really been relevant for me is vaginal discharge, which I don't know if all of our listeners know this, but women have varying amounts of it, which isn't really talked about in health or sex ed or whatever course you had. You learn about your period, you learn about sex, and peeing, and that's pretty much it. Like,
yes.
So when I had damp underwear every day, I was really confused, and I didn't understand what was, I thought something was wrong with me because I hadn't learned about it. So when I asked my doctor, she was like, yeah, it happens to some people. Like, just wear a liner every day. And I was like, what? That sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. I was really shameful about it. I always felt like my vagina was gross. Like, it was extra gross.
Yes.
Which is an awful feeling tied in with my, you know, eating disorder. And I never felt like it was operating well. Like, I didn't get it.
It's like you have to be dry at the right time and wet at the right time, and it has to look a certain way. It has to be groomed a certain way. It has to be ridiculous.
Yeah. And you know, throughout high school, you're like, do you shave? Like, what do you do? Like, what do guys like? Like, you just don't know that it doesn't fucking matter. And if someone wants to be in your vagina, they're going to be in your, like, it's not, it doesn't fucking matter. But it's this huge topic.
Yeah.
Because women want to be likable and
desirable.
That's the word. And in the style and then on trend and whatever.
Putting that much pressure too on the expectations of what your vagina or, you know, your, I don't even know. It's not just the vagina, but the whole area down there should look like is just, it's also can be very damaging. And that was something I wrote about because I remember, and I haven't shared this, but talking to you reminded me of this, that when I was probably around 17, it was the thing to get those, you know, Brazilian waxes. And do you have, like, I don't even know all the things, but do you have like the runway or the whatever? And I don't, there's like all a bunch of different ones you could choose. And I remember I did that because I remember that at the time, that's what my boyfriend wanted. That was the expectation. I remember all my friends were doing that. And when I did that, I had a really intense negative emotional reaction because I felt like I looked like a little girl. And the fact that my boyfriend wanted that, it put me in a really bad place where I was already in a bad place of trying to, you know, heal from that. And
that's very triggering.
Yes. And the same thing with virginity, how much, you know, virgins are pure and beautiful and wonderful. And it's, I mean, it's portrayed in almost every movie. And if you're not a virgin, you're not, or you're damaged in some way. And I wasn't a virgin and it wasn't even my fault. It happened when I was 11 and just having, you know, not, I mean, who even cares? I remember being a teenager and seeing a movie and how much pressure it was around this girl that when she was first with her husband that she bled, right? Because she was a virgin and having the shame that I would never do that, you know, that I wouldn't. And you know what? Just stop. Like, why is it so important? Like all of this, like all of these things, like the state of our hymen and being, like you're mentioning, being too dry, being too wet, just like, it's just our body and it's all beautiful and it's all wonderful. And yeah, I just went off on a tangent there.
No, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. It's so fucked. I use that word a lot.
So do I. So it's fine.
Okay, good. It's the fucking patriarchy. I mean, we are, our textbook was written by men, designed by men, and it's bullshit. And it's hurtful that we don't learn that this is all wrong until we're adults.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's changing a lot. You know, I'm almost jealous of the younger generations because they're growing up with more self-acceptance and body positivity, but you know, we really had to create that for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so much focus on our vaginas, which makes us feel so detached from it
Yeah.
and feel like something's always wrong with it or something needs to be changed or altered. And this is when, as it applies to underwear, like I always felt like something was wrong with me because you grow up with the idea that you wear a pair of underwear during the day and you wear a pair of underwear during at night. It's different for men, maybe it's the same, but that's what I was taught. Like, that's just what you do. When you get dressed in the morning and you get dressed for your bed. And I found that that wasn't really working for me. So I'd have to create all these different options for myself, like using panty liners or toilet paper or something, which was uncomfortable and not like very sanitary. And it just never felt comfortable, which really, really filtered into my sex life. That combined with some emotional traumas with some of my partners, I had relationships where my partner would be really insecure about when I didn't want to have sex. Like if I wasn't in the mood, and if they were, that was a problem. And it made me feel very shameful and guilty. But it was only because it just made them very insecure.
Yes.
So that really filtered into my feelings around my vagina. And I just felt like it was a problem. And it wasn't until my like earlier 20s that I started having really kind, smart, vulnerable female friends that I'd be able to talk about my anatomy with and our vaginas and have it be funny and open and good. And like, that's when I learned that I was completely normal and yes. It was fun and helpful to talk with everybody about it. And like, oh yeah, that's totally normal. Like this crazy thing happened to me. Like, oh, I have a yeast infection again. Like, it's just like UTIs, like all that stuff. And just feeling like, oh, wow, I'm not the only woman in the world that struggles with this self-conscious feeling. And that's when I started, that kind of simultaneously occurred when I started having more positive relationships with people and intimate relationships and just started creating, like, I started feeling more confident around my body and more beautiful and like really tapping into my sexuality. I know I haven't even started talking about the switch underwear. I promise I'll get there
no,
soon.
No, I love everything you're sharing. Don't even worry about it. I'm okay. Listening. I'm very engaged. Okay. I love it.
Good. Perfect. It just led up to this confidence. Like all of these different experiences led up to the confidence around starting switch. And probably the cherry on top was that a huge revelation in the past few years is that my eating disorder was a huge mask. It was part of a mask and confusion around my sexuality. I didn't come out as queer until a couple years ago. And I created space to understand that because my partner and I started to have a non-monogamous relationship and exploring new kinds of relationships with other people in a really like loving, healthy, boundary-filled environment, which has been incredible for the two of us. My partner of 3.5 years, that really gave me the opportunity to explore my sexuality more. And I realized that I was queer, which was huge for me. And I realized that I think that my whole life, when I was looking at other women's bodies and judging myself and comparing, it left out any opportunity for me to realize that maybe I was admiring them or I was attracted to them.
Yeah.
And which is sad for me. Like I would have loved to know more about my sexuality earlier in my life, but this is just sometimes how it happens. And so that really brought everything full circle. And when I decided to move forward with Switch, I was camping. And this happens every time I'm camping. I try to pack light and I just want to change before bed. And all I want to do is change my underwear. But you have to take your shoes off and then lie down in your tent and then take your pants off and then change your underwear and then put it back on and then put all your pants back on and then your shoes. And it's just like this whole thing. And like, God forbid you have your period on a camping trip. Like, oh, it's just a nightmare. And every time I camp, I'm like, I wish I had underwear to just change without taking my pants off. Like, you know, every time I camp, I'd be like, that should exist. And then I forget. And then I go camping again. And then but it's a product that I've always wished I had. It's just the idea of it sounded so nuts that like I didn't think about it hard enough.
Yeah.
But with all the transformation around the fashion industry in regards to sustainability and recycled materials and the idea of a waste-free lifestyle, that those factors and bits of knowledge really filtered in and kind of sprung this idea. And I was camping around 4th of July last year, and I was like, that's it. Like, there has to be this product. Like, I feel like if I went to REI or something, I could find a sporty, like, chic athletic underwear made for backpackers or like athletes that fastened at each hip so you could just switch out your underwear without taking your pants off. Like, I was like, that has to exist. Like, it's either at REI or Patagonia or somewhere online. Like, this exists. So I left that camping trip and did all this research and Googled and Googled and Googled, and I was so surprised that I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
Like, I found medical underwear. I found incontinence underwear. I found underwear catered to the diverse body and disabled community that had like hook and eye clasps. Like, there are versions of it in the world, but not with the mission and the direction I was looking for, or the like sleekness and utility and function. So I started thinking about this concept, and I was from the interior design world. I had no idea what I was doing. So I reached out to a couple people just to run the idea by, because I was like, maybe I could sell this idea. Maybe I could make it. I didn't know. And the first person who texted me back connected me with a product design specialist who's been in the industry for 30 years in LA. And she said, I'm super busy. I'm slammed. I'm on retainer for this. I won't say the company's name, but a huge athletic company doing design work for them. Please send me an email. Happy to sign an NDA. Whatever you want to tell me. I'm so excited to hear your idea. I don't know when I'm going to get back to you, but please know I will respond. And I was like, okay, great. She sounds great. Managing my expectations. This is crazy. I don't care when you write back. So I wrote her this long email with all my hopes and dreams for this underwear, like sporty, comfortable, seamless, athletic underwear that you can tear off and replace super easily without having to take your entire outfit off, for camping, for maternity, for, you know, just working long days, commuting by subway, commuting by bike. You get to work, you're sweaty, you know, there's so many applications. And I was like, great, I feel so good. I did something about it. I wrote this person, you know, maybe they'll write me back. And then later that night she wrote back and was like, yeah, she was like, I'm sorry I wrote back so quickly. And then just launched into this email being like, this is incredible. I got to work on this with you. This is amazing. This is totally a saleable product. We got to do this. And just like poured out all her ideas and everything. And then that's how it started. We just started having little chats and sessions, conversations over the phone, working through the details. And that led to a prototype, which led to me being introduced to someone who helped me with business development and financial projections. And it happened so fast, but I knew exactly that I was supposed to be doing this. And it just snowballed. And now we're soft launched and we just finished up our crowdfunding campaign and are in the middle of launching our shopping cart so we can continue getting pre-orders before we produce this fall.
That is awesome. How amazing. Your whole story from everything that, you know, all the struggles and trauma and pain and moving past that and moving into this who you are today, where you know who you are. Yes, you still struggle, say, with when eating disorder rears its head, but you know how to deal with that, or you know what you need to deal with that, and you know who you are, your sexuality, and you're embracing that. And now you started the second company, your second company, right? Or is there more, even more?
No,
second company. And this is just such an amazing message that I bet when you were young and really deep into that, you know, hate for your body and pain and sadness, that I know it feels like you're never going to come out of that. And now look where you are. And it's just so inspiring. And I absolutely love it. How can people get your underwear? Or where can they find you? How can they follow you? And where can they pre-order, you mentioned?
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for saying all that. It's been really great to unpack with you. So we have our website. It's switchunderwear.com. There's no I in switch. And we're currently setting up our pre-order right now. It should be ready by the time you post this podcast. And we have an Instagram, Switch Underwear. We're on Facebook. It's all available there. You can Google Switch Underwear. It should start to show up. we're doing pre-orders right now because we're so new. We've got that one style, the mid-rise bikini. It's designed to align with your favorite workout leggings so that it's super secure and comfortable. You know, leave a spin class, out your underwear, go to work, whatever your routine is. So yeah, and I'm always available by email. I love it. I love it when people reach out to me with their own ideas for the product or their own thoughts, or just hello@switchunderwear.com. And yeah, we're new. We love support and help and feedback. So it's all great.
That's awesome. And it's SWTCH. And I, of course, will have all of the links to everything you just mentioned in the show notes.
Right.
So that it's easily accessible. I think it's phenomenal. I always like to give guests, I always ask them at the end if there's anything else they want to make sure that they leave the listeners with. And I was just thinking about this, just everything you shared, and there's so many beautiful lessons of overcoming and just the honesty about your depression, your anxiety, your eating disorder, your sexuality, just everything, and taking all of that and creating the life that you love to live. So there's just so much. And then including your company, Switch. So if there's anything you'd like to leave the audience that is in regards to any of that stuff, all I was trying to say is you just honored us with so much amazing insight and knowledge and love. And so whatever you would like to leave the audience after my big long thing there.
No, thank you. I think that the message I always really want to get across, because when I talk about my story, it's not always, it's a little surprising, because you would think that someone who has two companies and is where they are right now, where they're at right now, would have planned this all out and like had goals, 5-year, 10-year goals. But I really didn't. I think the turning point for me is that I really got to this place where I realized that I could imagine the life that I wanted. Like I painted the landscape for the types of relationships and love that I wanted and the life that I wanted. And trusting that imagination and trusting that intuition is the most important thing. Like when you're feeling like, I can't do this, I'll never be able to do that, or that's crazy, or I need to do way more planning to get there. It's never the perfect time to do anything. It's always a shitty time. Like it's never ideal and you just have to do it. And if it's not easy to just do it, it's sometimes asking the people around you or the people who love you if they could help you get what you need, which is sometimes the hardest thing I feel like for people to do, is to lean on the people in their life, because there's that fear of rejection or it's that fear of being let down. But like learning that trust like really gets you places. So I would just say that it is possible to imagine a life and then find ways to make it happen. You just have to trust yourself.
I love that. I love that. That's so incredibly important. I love how you really just everything you said. I'm just overwhelmed with everything. I absolutely loved it. And how, you can create the life that you want, that all of that self-doubt and everything that creeps in, especially when you've experienced the things like you've experienced, because you're carrying all of that with you, it can seem impossible. I am a huge over-planner, and it's almost like I plan because I'm scared to take the next step. So I'm comfortable in that planning space. But really, it's keeping me from moving forward. So I just really appreciated that.
No, God, thank you so much for listening and having me. This is great.
Absolutely.
I love what you're doing with this podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. I loved our conversation. I'm just so energized. I'm so appreciative of everything that you shared. Thank you so much. And I hope that you have a beautiful day.
You too. Thank you, Felicia.